idiots.
No, they had little guns.
What size?
Forgotten.
Were they sufficient to deal with panthers
no,
and tigers?
No, not really. Never fired one, so I really didn't know too much about it. Anyway, I had been promised that when things simmered down and everything was sorted out, I would go to the Canadian Scottish.
Was it a promise to you or to the other two officers and the other men involved as well?
To me. Mm-hmm. And, no, just to me, because the brigadier, whatever brigade in the north now is, the brigadier came up to see what was cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And he spotted my canned scotch and said, you know, what the hell are you doing here? I told him, he said, well, we'll get you back to your unit.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually there was a little bit of, we did a little mortaring once in a while just to keep things stirred up and get mortared in return.
Mm-hmm.
And shelled a bit and people, you know, just as the odd guy getting wounded or killed. Nothing, you know, nothing really.
Nothing major attack.
Then, what happened after that? I'll be blowed if this mortar reinforcement off poor beggar got wounded. So I went back to the mortar platoon. Well, this was okay. I didn't mind. I didn't want to be way out there doing patrols in the middle of the night. That was not my idea of you know, having a good time. It's pretty hairy.
And mortars are better than tackling a Tiger tank with
yeah.
a little two-pounder or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So eventually, word came, get your gear packed. You're going back to Scottish.
Mm-hmm.
So Duncan and I met with great glee. We hadn't seen each other for all the time we'd been with the North Novies, because I, being the mortar, so I was around, but more or less around battalion headquarters,
mm-hmm.
roughly, you see, whereas he was in one of the rifle companies. The other chap, Stuart, he elected to stay with the North Novies.
Mm-hmm.
But Duncan and I, no way, we've been canned Scots for a long time. And about five or six men, that's all.
What about the other 60-odd?
Some of them had been wounded, and there were casualties.
But most
silent. And some of them had never been actually served with the Scottish.
So it didn't really matter to them.
So they, and they had made friends with the North Novies and whatnot. And so they stayed.
But
and
the
so
six or seven other fellows went with you two and...
Yeah, I went with Duncan and me, that was all. One small truck.
How did you find the Canadian Scots? Have they been badly mauled by what they had seen on through?
Well, not compared to the North Novies, they hadn't. They had suffered their share of casualties in the early days, so the first two or three days when they were attacking.
That first landing, they lost quite a few.
They had quite a few then. And then their... But they were essentially the same. I knew most of the officers, you know, the officers. Christ, I was back home in my group. They knew me. They knew I was deaf. And, you know, it was all altogether different. I got a new lease of life. I was very unhappy with the North Novies. Mainly because it wasn't my unit. I was pining for the canned Scots. So was Duncan. But they were good, they were damn good fellows, those North Novies. They were more like Scots than we were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because a lot of them were basically Scottish descent. And
a lot of Bretons. And
a lot of, you know, Cape Bretoners. And there were a lot of Scots. They were damn good guys, too.
Mm-hmm. Good fighters.
And so then I was waffling around with the Scottish then for CO of Headquarters Company until my hearing went.
How long a time is that then between the time
that was
joined?
In July then.
So you had been with them for about a month before you were wounded?
With the Scottish, no, only about a week or... I can't actually say I was wounded. I already said that, you know. I wasn't. Nothing hit me,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, what were the circumstances surrounding the wound?
Oh, I couldn't hear. The MO knew I could. I was useless,
mm-hmm.
you know.
I mean, well, how did it happen? Was it a bomb, shell?
A shell.
Totally unexpected?
Just, no, sure, just come in.
Yeah.
Bing.
Did you fall down
I was too close. No, well, they did. They do it once in a while, the Jerrys would.
Just to keep you on your toes.
Just to keep, yeah, just... And they had every location where we were absolutely taped because they had vacated.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew where they...
farmhouse was.
Gravel pits were, and like with the North Novies, we used to go out in the morning, daybreak, or just late, just after daybreak. We'd take a mortar and get on the road to a gravel pit, about a quarter of a mile or so. You'd get it all lined up and everything else, and then ram a bunch down, and 2 or 3 minutes, stuff would start landing, you know. And so we, then we'd pick up and go. We'd go back. Back to where we were. They wouldn't let us fire from the battalion area, you see.
No, because
we would
fire back to
retaliate
them.
The retaliation right away. So when I got back to England, and they...
Well, let's go back to the wounding. The MO knows that you have a hearing problem, and he finds out that your other ear now is gone.
No, he didn't know I had a hearing problem.
Didn't he?
No.
But he did survive.
It was the MO was relieving our regular one, and he was had come in... He had come in with me on D plus one, this MO, you see. And in fact, he and I, when this bombing, but the next morning, a plane, I think he was being chased by one of ours, but anyway, he was coming right for us, and this MO and I both tried to get in the same slit at the same time, which was impossible.
Who landed on the bottom?
Anyway, the guy didn't open fire, so... he had it done, he'd have wiped us out. But it was this M.O., you see, this same fellow. I hadn't seen him for a month. He was relieving our battalion M.O.
Did you try and stay with the battalion? Did you tell them this is just temporary and that it would go
no,
away?
No, I was most unhappy. I didn't know. I thought, am I going to be deaf? And so he said, he had me sent back. And... then they got to, when they got back to England, there was some doubt, I know, when they got back to England, as to whether I was showing signs of being bomb happy, you see. Then they decided no, wasn't, thank Christ. So... then I was sent back. I tried to get back to France again. Not precisely to the Cannes Scots, but I took a flamethrower course.
Mm-hmm.
And
so how long did it take your hearing to return to what it had been?
You almost have to ask my wife. We weren't married then, of course, but she came to see me.
So how did you meet your future wife?
Well, I was instructing at the battle school.
In about 1943?
42.
And you two fell in love there? And you didn't marry right away, though, did you?
No. We met indirectly through a Victoria family.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was an English girl, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah. She was in the British Friends. And, no, the hearing, I suppose whatever it was healed up in there. It wasn't all that long, as I recall, when it came back.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then I couldn't stand it, being around the holding unit. So I applied and I got on this, I took this flamethrower course.
Well, why did you do that? Why, if you were in A1 condition again, why would you not just be reposted?
They wouldn't, because they knew I was... now deaf, you see, on my medical papers that were current, not my 1939 stuff, you see.
Mm-hmm. Well, deaf. How would learning how to use a flamethrower help you in there, if you were legally deaf in their eyes?
Well, I...
Was it just to sort of help yourself keep going?
Yeah, I took this cry. I thought maybe, well, you know, well, I damn near got away with it, too. But I got promoted to major. And,
while you were taking this course?
Or just after, I think. It was just after I'd taken it. And that was too senior.
Mm-hmm.
For, I think a flamethrower would have taken a captain. If I'd stayed a captain, I could may well have made it back. But
but not as a major.
No.
So what happened to you then when you got your...
Then I was sent to a training. They established training battalions. We had these guys coming over from Canada.
Mm-hmm. Were these the drafted conscripted fellows?
Some of them, yeah. Not all of them. Some of them were. So they had training battalions. And so there I was a company commander in a training battalion.
Mm-hmm.
And that went on for a while. Then the war finished. And then this training battalion was made into a repat depot.
Mm-hmm. And you stayed with...
I just automatically stayed on. I was there anyway. I didn't want to come home. We got married. My wife got out of the Wrens then. She had a flat. She'd gone back to her pre-war flat in Hove. And I had a home in England and everything else. What the hell? I was quite happy with the pay and everything. I had no reason to come back. Like, you know, like some of the married chaps, of course.
They were in a hurry to get back.
They were, naturally. So, I came back and...
With your wife?
She came 3 months later.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in March 46. She came out in July 46.
It was almost a full year after the war had ended.
Yeah, very nearly.
How did you find England in 1945, early 46? After the victory celebrations had ended and England was trying to get back to normal again. Was it difficult for us?
I really don't know. We were divorced from the civilian people. They still had their rations and...
So you weren't with them, you were in military bases?
Oh yeah, I was living... I'd only get down to see my wife. Eventually I got about 30 miles away. I got to the stage where I had my own car and driver.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to see her a little more frequently then.
Well, tell me, I know this is backtracking a wee bit, but how were the relations between Canadian soldiers and the English population? It must have been pretty good with you because you actually married one.
Well, I was actually from there too, but
mm-hmm.
I think they were very good. There's obviously a number of guys that got married over there, you know, the troops.
But you were accepted as the American...
They were very good. And the Americans were accepted too. Those Brits put up with a lot, you know. I could see here, you're going into your favorite pub. It would be jam-packed with Americans.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't be too, you know, too friendly. And they'd, you know, they'd drink the place dry about an hour after opening time, and there wouldn't be any more till the next delivery next day.
Mm-hmm.
But they were very good, very friendly people. So I got home and just at that time old Bob Travis was given the job of reforming the Scottish as it is today.
He was given command of the unit.
That's right, to reform it again. And I was down in the mess and he said, do you know what you're going to do? Are you going to stay in Victoria? I said, yes. He said, will you be one of my company commanders? I said, yes. And I was actually taken on strength of Canadian Scottish before I had got my discharge from the... because I was on my leave, you see, my landing leave.
Yeah.
Discharge leave, or whatever you want to call it. So naturally, as soon as the first place I headed was for the mess, the armories, you know, to see what was going on. And... So I did, you see. I was already a major. But
and you retained that rank? You weren't lowered?
No. So I stayed until... that was 1946. So I stayed until 1950.
Mm-hmm. And were you company commander until 1950?
Yep. Until the thing... you know, the thing was off and running.
Was that your intention, just to help Travis get things going and then to balance?
Essentially, yes. Because... By this time, in 1948, I'd bought a sailboat,
mm-hmm.
and I...
That had taken over your life as a hobby?
That, and I'd always been a sailor, you see, a keen sailor, and so I stuck it out till 1950 and then said...
Mm-hmm.
But it was most interesting, My application was queried.
How so?
My application to join the Canadian Army and militia again, you see, was queried. It came from headquarters in Edmonton. It is noted that this officer is 37 years old, which is too old to be a company commander in the Canadian Infantry Corps. Anything more ridiculous than that?
Considering how you just come out of Northern Europe, not yet, but Western Europe, and serving as a company.
I was still in the Army. So, anyway, the Major General Penhale, a nice little chap, First World War type, he was district commander time. He saw some, got wind of some of this stuff and said, tore it up.
Mm-hmm. He knew you, I take it.
Me?
He knew you.
He didn't know me personally, but he knew the circumstances, you know. That things were going on. No, he didn't know and never heard of me. But it was pretty obvious. I was in pretty good shape and everything else, only 37 years old.
Peacetime soldier. Did you have trouble getting back up to strength? Did you find men were rather reluctant to join up again, the veterans?
No, we had quite a few. Damn good fellas, too. Because we were called out in 1948, you know, in the Fraser River floods. We went over as a unit. All these guys are only getting back to their army pay instead of their civilian pay. They got a raw deal.
How long were you there during the flood?
We were there for a week or 10 days. I had charge of a piece of dike down near Pitt Meadow somewhere. In the Alouette River, I guess.
What about men? I think, were they just officers that tended to re-enlist in the militia, or?
Oh no, we had quite a few sergeants. We were a pretty hefty unit in 1947, 48. Damn right. So all the company sergeant majors were all wartime. Mm-hmm. Quite a few of the sergeants. And quite a few of the officers. All the senior officers, of course.
In wartime.
Wartime. Some of the captains. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, we were able to operate right off the bat.
How was militia life in the 40s as compared, the late 40s as compared to the 30s? How did you find, was there more of everything? Better equipment, better?
Well, a little more equipment, but it was essentially the same. Mm-hmm. Really wasn't all that much. Mainly because the same kind of people were still running it.
Yeah.
You see, they got all these new guys now, they're not dry behind the ears yet. That's where the change has come in.
Well, I was quite surprised when I was down at the mess in July, that the commanding officer was as young as he was.
Yeah.
He strikes me as being awfully young.
Well, he is youthful looking.
Is he?
You know, but, he's been, God knows, he's been in the, he's got his CD, so he's always been in the militia for over 12 years. Mm-hmm. So, he's over 30. Must be way over 30.
Still, it seems awfully young for a CO.
Yeah, they look young to me. They all look like kids to me.
Well, I'm 23 and they look young to me.
Yeah.
Well, how have you, on the sidelines, you've been watching it now for about 30 years, the Canadian Scottish. Do you think it's in good shape now and it's developed?
Yes, it has.
Uh-huh. Just the fact that it survived intact?
Well, everything's changed. I've talked about it with Major Plows and Whiteman and whatnot. To listen to these young fellows talk today, we don't know what they're talking about.
The
everything, all the whole new sets of initials for this and that and the other, we don't know what it's all about.
Yeah.
We don't know, we don't know anything anymore, really, except the basics, which sometimes I wonder whether they know.
Mm-hmm.
That may be unfair, really, but...
No, I think that kind of soldiering that they're doing now, a lot of the jargon they use isn't necessary, but the ability to handle and deal with people that you knew and you had experience doing is something they need and perhaps don't have.
Well, some of them get it they will get it over the course of time. They're sent away on a lot of courses. I hear them talking when they get back, and I... I've no way of judging whether the courses they're sent on are any good or not.
Mm-hmm.
But they're pretty good. They, Sergeant's Mess is extremely well run, as far as I can see, and the Officer's Mess is certainly in good shape. And they spend more time, they work more than we did, mm-hmm. than we did before the war.
Do you mean in a tactical sense, with their men?
Whatever they're doing, they're down there, they're doing something. It may well be just showing paper around, because there's a heck of a lot more of it today than we had.
Mm-hmm. But they're down there involved in it, like.
They're down there and involved. Monday nights, Thursday nights, and they sometimes are on all day Saturday, or for 5 hours, well, whatever, you know, down there Saturday, but always, I can't remember the morning you were down there, whether they had, whether they were still operating, or whether they had stood down.
They must have stood down
for the summer.
Yeah.
But no, suddenly at 11 o'clock or 10:30, of the 7 or 8 of them would come up from appear from somewhere down below and have a coffee and then buzz off back again. They wouldn't see them
mm-hmm.
until lunchtime if you were still there. So they work.
So you think they're actually determined to do something?
Oh, you bet they are.
I've heard the argument that a lot of people that are in the militia today look at it as more of a part-time job, because they are paid, and it does help to supplement their income to some extent.
By a great deal, I would think, in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
There are some, undoubtedly, they're bound to be, but they're,
most, they're hard to
tell, they're pretty keen types. But I'll bet, I think if they went back to having to give all their pay to their regiment, I think quite a few of them would fade out of the picture before too long.
They'd
have to. Everything's different today.
Mm-hmm.
Their expenses are different. They're nearly all married.
Mm-hmm. And
we weren't. I mean, the married one was the exception rather than the rule, you see.
And the officers that I met seemed to be, to me at least, to be pushing 30, in the late 20s to 30.
Yeah.
Whereas you, when you joined up, and most of the officers, younger officers, were perhaps in their early 20s to 25.
Some of them, yeah. But we, I think we were older.
Did
you? Yeah, in the Scottish anyway, I think we were older than quite a few, on an average.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course,
you know, white men, they're all the same, white men, Plows,
Adam,
and
Henderson,
well, yeah, Henderson. We're all much of an age. I'm 73, and we were, yeah, 30, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And 32 was the age limit, was the limit for a lieutenant. No, not a militia.
Mm-hmm.
To go into action.
32. And I suppose you were very close to that when you first saw action.
When I got my captaincy, it was a godsend to me. I think I would have been too old as a lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
I think, sure, I would have been. I would have been. But I'd never have made it over. I would never have made it to the continent.
Yeah. You would have stayed in Britain or sent back to Canada.
I'd have stayed in Britain, I expect. So there were definite age limits, and which they stuck to by and large. It was the odd guy sneaked around it somehow with a little connivance.
Yeah. Well, look at all the majors or the generals who were commands taken from them because they had reached a certain age. The one I'm thinking of would be General Worthington. He was in command of 4th Division, 4th Armored Division.
Mm.
They said that he was too old, so they replaced him with someone else.
Yeah,
Kitching, I think.
Young guy. Kitching was quite young at the time.
Yeah. I think he was in his 30s.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had a bunch of hot young guys, you know. We had a brigadier. Well, one brigadier was only 27. That's right.
Dreadfully young for a brigadier, isn't it? Who was it?
Forgotten his name.
Yeah.
I saw him, too, somewhere. And then there's Churchill Mann, who is now, he's still alive, but barely.
Churchman, rather.
I keep wanting to call him Churchill Mann, but it's Churchman. He's got this disease of the brain.
Tell me something. Did you know him at all?
No, only that he was our brigadier, and I saw him at a couple of dances in our mess. That's, you know.
Well, a fellow that I've been talking to, Roy Henley, he's a member of 4NX with you, I think. He said that he knew Churchman after the war and also during the war. And when Churchman was in charge of the intelligence for Dieppe, for the Canadians, Henley has this feeling or this belief that Churchman was crazy at that time. I've asked a few people this, and...
No, I have no way of assessing. Well, I met him once after the war.
Yeah.
That was the only time I actually shook hands with him. Down the mess one night. He's been deteriorating ever since. He's got this, forgotten the name for it. It's a recognized disease.
But it's one in which the mental...
Yeah, and it goes completely. Just vegetable, really.
Okay. How old is he? In the 70s?
Certainly younger than I am. Oh, yeah, he's... Yeah. I'm sure he's younger than I am. Because he was one of the whiz kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Churchman.
What did you think of that, the whiz kids? I'm sure they were all RMC grads.
Oh, sure, they were.
People like Guy Simmons, I suppose, is another one.
He's a fine soldier.
Some say one of the best, if not the best, Canadian ever produced.
Yeah.
Did you ever meet him? Or?
Mm-hmm. Only once. That was in France. A place called Rots.
Mm-hmm.
I was standing talking to somebody. I forgot who it was now. And lo and behold, here comes Simmons and his ADC.
Mm-hmm.
Walking down. We were on a sunken road. Came walking down. He wanted to go and have a look over the valley at the Carpiquet Airport. And we could see it, I think, from one of our company, forward companies, they could see it quite easily. He came wandering down. We smartly sprang to attention and saluted.
Did you know who he was?
Oh,
time?
You're damn right. Yeah. And, good morning, gentlemen. Where's the, you know, where do you go? How do you get, so told him where you went. I don't know, I never saw him come back. I don't know where he went. So that's my history.
Just
such
sort
as
of
it is.
To end it off, what did you do after the war as a career?
I got a job in the Parliament Buildings. Almost, Ronnie McCrimmon, who was one of our officers also, worked for in the Department of Mines before the war. And he was back working for them. And I was in the mess one night, and Ronnie was too, and I said, you know, just looking around, I was toying with the idea of going back into real estate again. I had been just for a short time, just when the war started, I was in real estate. And I was toying with the idea. I could easily have gone back in with Cableview, gone in with in Cableview's office, not in with him.
Mm-hmm.
But McCrimmon said, well, we need somebody in the department in the mineralogical branch who knows something about surveying and mapping and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just walked down and they jumped.
Mm-hmm.
Jumped at me. And they did very well, too, by me.
Were you afraid? Because you were a man close to 40, if not 40.
No, 37.
Yeah. 37. Was that a fear for you?
No.
Finding a job?
No.
You weren't afraid of that at all? What about your wife? She came here. Was she working?
No, she didn't work. oh, she did part-time later on. Because she had been in a dress. This high-style stuff in London or somewhere for a while before the war.
Was your dad still alive at the time?
Yeah, he died in 48.
You're saying that you bought this house shortly after you moved here, or after the war?
Oh, I bought it in 1950.
1950? Well, at that point, buying your house has ended right there, shall we?
Sure, anything you say. But
thank you very much for talking
with me. Well, I hope I'll be of some use to you.